Good evening, everybody. James McKenney here with my Science Hour. This is for April 6, 2023. A number of topics to cover tonight, including the tornadoes. Wow. The countless tornadoes. And I'm going to be talking about the AI issue that is just getting out of control. And Elon Musk, with a group of about 1,000 other people, came out who actually work with AI, developing AI products, and said, hey, we need a moratorium on this, and I'll be addressing this because it's something I worked on in the field of computer intelligence, telecommunications, encryption, and for 25 years of my life, I was in that telecommunications industry. And this is not the first time in history this has come along. Anyway, I'll be talking about that. I'll be talking about the ages of things. Just a comment on the three-ring circus that's going on with the Trump arrest. And I'm not going to get political, but I want to talk about, put this somewhat into perspective. And then also the failure of Richard Branson's Virgin Orbit company. I'll be talking about that. Okay, about tornadoes. Wow. On one night, 55 tornadoes racing through the entire country. And I looked at the map. These things stretched from down in Texas all the way up into the Iowa, Indiana, Ohio, etc. And, you know, people hiding in their basements, towns where they actually hit with just horrific stories of people being caught up in these tornadoes and loss of life. I have developed techniques for controlling and moving hurricanes, but tornadoes are a different animal. It's a very different thing because a tornado is already shorted out the electrical current. You're already over land. And so the techniques that you would use to short out a hurricane would only increase the energy in a tornado. The only thing you could possibly do is drag them around to drag them away from harm's way. In other words, drag them around farmhouses, drag them around cities so they don't hit cities. But when you start playing with Mother Nature, things could happen, like you could actually increase the strength of the storm, and if it got away from you, it could be a very devastating event and actually cause a lot more harm. So trying to play with Mother Nature is a very touchy thing. But the question is, could these tornadoes have been man-made? Because there does not seem to have been the electrical conditions necessary for that level of storm activity. So I'm not saying that it was. These things... I mean, we've had storm events like this long before weather control was an issue. But tremendous number of tornadoes, tremendous number of storms, and a tremendous amount of damage. Then what happens when a tornado basically is an extremely low-pressure cell? And what is going on is there's the vertical electric field. And of course, modern meteorology does not talk about any of this, but there's a discharge. The clouds discharge to the vertical electric field, and sets up a current. And what happens is, as the air is ionized down at ground level, it goes up the column, and as it goes up the column, it rotates. And the stronger the current, the stronger the rotation. And basically, this is due to the Coriolis force, because of the Earth spinning and something moving upwards in the gravitational field of the Earth. So that's where dust devils and tornadoes, cyclones, waterspouts, all of these cyclonic-type storms get their energy. And so how could you control them? How could you dissipate a storm? And it's very difficult. What happens with a hurricane is you're coming into shore, the electrical connection makes a much bigger eye. Let's just put it that way. The eye of the hurricane is much larger, the winds can reach about the same velocity, but the tornadoes are smaller. They're much higher velocity. And a leading edge of a hurricane, as it comes in and makes landfall, you get a lot of tornadoes that on the very leading edge because it's starting to discharge and short out to the coastline. And there you find a lot of tornadoes. So what people don't realize is as the hurricane comes in, you see the band clouds, you see the wind coming in, and all of a sudden there's a lot of rain. And within that rain, there are tornadoes. And they are the front line of damage that comes in with a hurricane. And then the high, constant, the straight line winds. And then you get to the eye where the maximum wind velocity is. But the way you can short out a hurricane is with a method I developed, short-circuiting it offshore. So you move out 50 or 100 miles out onto the continental shelf and short-circuit the hurricane. You move the grounding effect out. And so anyway, that is a way of controlling hurricanes. But with tornadoes, there's no such mechanism because they are already over ground. And so any attempt to play with them would actually increase their strength. Back to the hurricanes. What's going on is as the electrical discharge occurs, the air is ionized at the surface of the ocean, and so the electrical circuit is with the air, ionized air at the surface of the ocean. As the hurricane makes landfall, then it shorts out with land. And that actually diminishes, takes the energy out of the hurricane. It dumps its water. But by that time, a lot of wind damage has already occurred. And a lot of times, the real damage of a hurricane is in the water damage. And also the momentum of the water in a 100 to 150 mile an hour wind, you have that momentum of the water. Okay, so at any rate, on to the next topic. 1,000 tech giants that are working in the field of AI, artificial intelligence, have called for a minimum 6-month moratorium on AI. And absolutely, this is really important because what's going on with artificial intelligence is that it's very in a very rudimentary stage, and they're starting to implement it as if it were somehow a very mature science, and it's not. So anyway, back in the day when I was working in the telecommunications industry, there were knowledge-based systems. That's what they were called then. And there have been a number of different names that have come about. And the whole concept is if you take all the intelligent people in the world that know things and you put it all together, then it becomes a knowledge-based system. And all the knowledge would be there. And it's just such a lollipop and roses, rosy-colored sunglasses idea of how the world works. It just does not work because, first of all, it becomes infiltrated. It becomes infiltrated with somebody's agenda. You know, and that's number one. That's the number one biggest issue is that everything. Let's look at Wikipedia. Perfect example of everybody gets to contribute. Everybody gets to put their piece of knowledge, open platform for the public. Within 1 year, it is taken over by the CIA, completely controlled. All of the information is completely edited. All of the talking points that they want to pass down to you, the public, are promoted there. Things that they don't want promoted are not put up there. It is totally controlled. And that's the perfect example of an AI system, exactly the way one would theorize that it should work. So these people sitting in ivory towers or in corporate offices, they're trying to make money on this. So the first issue is that they become subverted and controlled immediately. Now, let me ask you a question. Once a knowledge-based system or an AI system gets locked in place, then that's going to be in place forever. Let's look at another example, the peer-reviewed journals. Now, talk about good intentions. Oh, my goodness, peer-reviewed journals are next to godliness. And what happens is when something is peer-reviewed, the belief is that the person reviewing it is an authority. Therefore, they have the final say if something should be published in the peer-reviewed journals. And then there's some kind of sanctimonium. Once it's there, it's direct from God. It cannot be touched. I was criticized one time at an American Geophysical Union meeting by a top NASA scientist. Michael Muma was his name, a real jerk, a real arrogant jerk. I don't know if the jerk is still alive, but anyway, he had a whole group of graduate students behind him, and you can tell graduate students, you know, they're sloppily dressed, their shoes are not tied half the time, or, you know, they might be on the wrong feet, their shirt's buttoned up, one button off, you know, they're people that are just, you know, they spend their life with the nose in a book. And they were standing in the background, and he came up to me, and I had a poster. You can see the poster is one of the three posters on my webpage. So it was 1997, I believe. And he comes up to me, and he says, what are you doing here? And I'm presenting at an American Geophysical Union meeting. And I had a computer. I had a beautiful poster, and none of the NASA scientists had beautiful posters. They had little 8.5-inch sheets of paper that they'd pin up on their board. I had a beautiful poster that you could read from a very long distance that comets are not dirty snowballs. You know, newsflash, comets are not dirty snowballs. So anyway, he comes up and basically threatens me. And he says, we don't like what you're doing here. And I said, what I should be doing is taking peer-reviewed published journals, adding a little bit of information to it, and then getting that published. And he goes, yes, that's what you're supposed to be doing. And I cannot repeat on the air what I told him. And he left with his baggy pants and his skinny little tie that was 50 years old. Anyway, this is the kind of mentality you get with peer review. So the idea of peer review is that somehow sanctimonium, once it's peer reviewed, and I do have peer reviewed articles that are published in astrophysics journals. Yes, I do. Probably more than the people who criticize me on the standard group of outreach people that get paid under the table to criticize me on the internet. But it's another example of what you might consider the equivalent of an AI system, a knowledge-based system where the most knowledgeable people in that field are putting their information there. And the reality is, after looking at this and after being around astrophysics, space science, and astronomy the better part of 50 years now, 99.9% of everything in those published journals is simply wrong, simply false, could not possibly be true. So now I ask you the following question. Given this, given examples, and the fact that knowledge-based or AI systems have been around, and the people have been trying to develop these, believing that computers can think better than people, etc., for a long time, these things have been around. Let me ask you a question. Say an AI system was solidified 30 years ago. Okay, 30 years ago, all of the knowledge base at that time was put into a computer, and we would then operate on that knowledge base for the rest of all time. Would you want your life today to be operated based on principles that were known about, and the lack of principles that are known about today, so all the discoveries that have been made since? Would you want your life and everything happening in your life to be run by an AI system that was 30 years old? No. Well, how could you ever change these systems? Because once they're in place, once they've been obfuscated, once they've been overtaken with an agenda in mind, you're not going to change that. It's going to be the same, and that's what the Matrix is. That's what literally the Matrix is a computer that runs everything, or a set of rules. So the Matrix has been around for a long time. But AI systems are weak, and what's going on right now is that the AI systems are extremely, extremely rudimentary. They're just barely able to do speech recognition. They can write a poem, for example, and here's something I want to throw in before I forget. Like most people, I use Skype, and all of a sudden this thing starts popping up every day, every morning. Bing! Bing wants to be your friend. Type in a question and I'll be your friend. And you're supposed to, it's an AI-based system, and it says, I don't know all the answers because I'm just starting to learn, but I can be your friend and we can have conversations. And then they give examples like if you wanted to write a letter to associates on some kind of mailing list, the Bing thing could write it for you. Oh, well, gee, isn't that swell? Well, I can write my own invitation letters, thank you very much. And I don't need Bing to do it, or they showed an example how it could take a subject and create a poem or lyrics to music or something like that. Well, isn't that just dandy? I don't want this thing on my phone. I don't want it in my communications. I don't want it there. But Microsoft, which owns Skype, purchased Skype, Microsoft then made this arrangement with Bing, which I'm not really sure what Bing even is, but made this arrangement where then they would incorporate it on Skype. And so how do you get rid of it? I'm still looking into it, but I believe what you do is you, when it pops up, you do like a block, like you would do with any number. But I don't know if you can block it. I'll have to see. I've yet to get rid of this ugly little nuisance pest that's on my Skype account. And who knows what other things they're putting in there, AI-based or tracking who you're calling or the length of calls, the content of the calls, who knows. Anyway, a 30-year-old AI database would really be horrific because, say, you were driving your car. Would you want your car to be driven by an AI system that was literally 30 years old? Of course not. There was I saw Neil deGrasse Tyson, who is the ranked defender of anything in the standard science community. And he was talking about AI cars and being driven and how you should really feel good if you got killed in a car with AI driving your car, then you should be glad that that accident would then be fed into the system so it would never happen again. And my comment is, well, like, look, I've been driving for, you know, since I was 16. I don't even want to calculate how many decades that is. But over those decades, I've become very experienced at looking at my side mirrors and looking around and looking at other things and understanding how traffic is flowing and things, preparing, looking for. One time I had a passenger. This is funny. Had a passenger in the car with me, and I said, this guy here is going to change lanes without signaling. And the person looks at the car and says, well, how do you know that? And just then the car switches lanes right in front of me, cuts me off, and they said, well, how did you know that? And I said, well, I could tell he was a Japanese or Chinese driver, and they only have tunnel vision. They never looked to the side. They never looked to the mirrors. And I could see the guy edging over, and I could see he was nervous. He was nervous. He was looking straight ahead, and he was edging over to the dotted line. And I knew this guy was going to change lanes. I could just tell it. And would an AI system pick that up? No, not at all. But that was my experience from years of driving, and I could tell that this guy. And you can also tell Oriental drivers and nothing against them. It's just that they're myopic. That's the way they do engineering also. They take an idea and they can run with it. They can improve on it. They can make products. They can do all kinds of things, but they're not idea people. They're not the people that are going to invent something traditionally. Maybe someday some of them will. But at any rate, they're myopic. They only look straight ahead. Only thing that occurs to them is what's directly in front of them. And that's an example of where AI would not have picked that up. Sorry, AI and Neil deGrasse Tyson, but that's literally what he said, that if you get killed in a car accident with AI operating your vehicle, you should be happy because that accident, what caused it, will never happen again. It'll be fed back into the learning system. And it's just like, to me, these people are just nuts, thinking that AI systems are progressed to the point where you should turn over your car to them. No, no, no. Thank you very much. I'll take a car that I have complete control of, and I will drive it. Thank you. And when I get to the point where I can't do that anymore, I'll let somebody else who's experienced drive for me, somebody that I trust, not an AI system. And by the way, this is what's wrong with the U.S. military. This is why if they went to fight a war in, you know, wherever, they're not going to fare well in a real war. I'm not talking about the Afghanistans and Iraqs and things like that. I'm not talking about those kind of wars. I'm talking about a full-scale shooting war with the United States march to the death type of war. The United States would not fare well, because everything depends on AI and GPS. And once those things break down, which they will in the field, they will have difficulties, or if they took out the satellites or the other means of communications where you have that chain link fence of communication back to headquarters, etc. Once that starts to break down, then your boots on the ground, mano a mano, as they say, man to man, and in that case, without its high-tech equipment, the United States Army and military is going to be one of the worst militaries ever seasoned on the ground, just because they depend too heavily on AI and GPS. I've always said that in the military, you cannot take a pee without having GPS or AI or some kind of instructions to allow you to do it, and that's the extreme level. Another thing about AI is that people, you and me, people have a soul. Now, AI systems are never going to be able to do the things that people do because they simply don't have a soul. When you experience music, for example, a computer is not going to experience the feelings that you experience when you listen to a great piece of music. So, for example, there's, let's just take something that modern that many people are familiar with. There's that Disney movie about the, it's called, what is it? The princess that's touches everything and turns to ice. And the lead song from that musical is very inspiring. And I think parents, especially of little girls, are surprised that their little girls come home from that movie, and for weeks they're singing it. It kind of drives parents crazy. But it's one of those songs that just like grabs everybody's attention. That's not your mind doing that, grabbing that attention. It's your soul, because it affects your spirit. We actually even say that. It raised my spirit. And that's the way a lot of gospel music is, a lot of music in general, or plays, or movies that grab your attention, and it kind of rings you out. You actually come out of a movie kind of like you just went through a ringer, you know, emotionally and physically, and you're wrapped up in this. I went to a movie, the Top Gun Maverick movie, the recent Tom Cruise one, and good grief, you come out of there and everybody's like, you know, their eyes are, you know, they're hardly able to walk because that movie is so intense. But it really grabs you, and that's universal. It's not just me, but what is that? Is that my brain neurons interacting and causes me to be that way? No, it's your spirit. And that's something AI can never, ever duplicate. Okay, now let me talk about another aspect of AI, and that is, very simply, that 99.9% of all science, the physical scientists, physical sciences, I'm not talking about chemistry 101, mixing water with some chemical or something, rates of reaction or things like that that are well known in the laboratory. I'm talking about the understanding of physical processes in the universe, especially when you come to physics, astrophysics, space science, geology, space geology, meteorology, what causes weather, what causes climate, etc. We are about 0.01% understanding what is really going on here. And I will say this, not bragging or anything, but my work has revolutionized the understanding of all of these fields because of the understanding of the electrical nature of the solar system, that Earth's weather, for example, is primarily electrical. It's not due to the sunlight coming in to the atmosphere. It's due to electrical conditions. And so what if you based an artificial intelligence system on all of this incorrect science? Absolutely ludicrous. And so imagine in 20 to 30 years from now that all of a sudden the people are still living under this false set of rules of science, and the textbooks and the people are learning it, and it's still going on, just even with textbooks. The idea that you would have a knowledge-based system, an artificial intelligence-based system, based on totally incorrect information, and how comets work, how Earth interacts with the electrical fields in the solar system, etc. It's just absolutely incredible that you would then cease to progress. The human race would stop progressing because the assumption would be that all of our major knowledge that could possibly be is already known and it's in this AI system. False, false, false. Completely ridiculous. And so the point is that in spite of the fact that there are people that think they know everything. In fact, there's a theory in physics that's called the theory of everything, a universal theory that encompasses all physical processes, is just ludicrous. These are ivory tower nobodies that have a little pulpit and pretend like they're really smart. I always say this, whenever there's a discovery, whether it's a new planet, whether it's an archaeological discovery or something, right away somebody has to put a date on it, a size, some kind of measurement. And that's the way science is, because somebody has to act like an expert. And if you can't put a date on it, well, gee, you're not a very big expert. And so archaeology is a great field to understand that, where you know, as soon as an archaeological dig is brought up to light, oh, somebody puts a date on it. Oh, that's from the classic period. That's from the second dynasty, you know, and or whatever it is. And without any concept of what they're saying, without any ability to really, and then once that's put on there by said hierarchy person sitting in their ivory tower, then that sticks. And everybody else has got to sing to that tune. And as long as they do, everybody's happy, everybody gets a paycheck, and that's the way the system works. But coming back to reality, when you come back to a reality check, AI systems have simply a fundamental flaw. And I've just listed them all, I should say a series of fundamental flaws. They simply will never work. They will not be able to progress. If something, let's take a hypothetical case here. Imagine an AI system that has all the knowledge in the universe, and it's all correct except for one thing. Just one error in there. Now, in a logical world, that could not bring you to logical conclusions that are correct. Every time that piece of incorrect knowledge gets mixed in with other knowledge, then something has to come out wrong. And so that generates more misinformation, so that one error generates more errors, which generate more errors, which generate more errors, and it propagates. So a single error in an AI system will propagate through the system, eventually corrupting everything in the system. Now, Do you want AI systems to run your life? No. Do you want them to run any portion of your life? No. Should they be in existence? No. Do the people that develop these systems sit in some kind of an ivory tower or a closed cubicle unrelated to the rest of the world? Yes. Are the facts that are put into AI systems 100% correct? No. In fact, most of the information is absolutely incorrect. So, you know, the idea that you should have things operating based on AI systems, let me give you another example here. Imagine that you go out of your house in the morning. This is the way an AI ivory tower nerd thinks. You go out of your house in the morning, and by the way, this is organized to them. These people are overly potty trained and parsimonious. But anyway, they imagine you going out of your house in the morning and you're on your way to work. Okay, because they know that you have to be at work by 8 o'clock and it's going to be so much traffic on the way, they know that you have to be out of your house. So they set your alarm for you at, the pre-designated time, allowing for all the factors to get to work. And they include a stop at McDonald's to pick up your favorite breakfast. Okay, so you walk out your house. The Uber, which has been notified, is in front of your house perfectly on time. You get into the Uber. The traffic, all of the traffic jams that were anticipated occur because AI is intelligent. It can predict the future. It's predictive, not only based on past events. Okay, then you get to McDonald's. Your favorite breakfast is ready because the AI system notified McDonald's that you will be there at exactly this time. And coming out the window of the drive-thru is your breakfast. You grab it, not wasting any time, and you get to work on time. Isn't that beautiful? Isn't that just the way you want to live your life? That's the brainchild of an AI expert. That's the way they think the world should be. And you should be this little automaton that goes from place to place based on the AI system. That's what they are projecting. That's what they want. But anyway, should AI even be in existence? And that's what these people are saying. They put a moratorium on AI for 6 months. And if you do that, what you're going to find out in those 6 months, the AI system that you were developing 6 months ago is already obsolete. It was obsolete when you made it. It wasn't even correct when you made it. So, you know, the people who want these developments, and of course, a lot of companies are doing this for money. They see profit. They see dollar signs. They see control. And once they get them in there, it's like the pharmaceutical industry. If they can provide your kids with shots that mess them up, then, gee, those are little patients coming into the office, and every time they come into the office throughout their entire life, here's a prescription, little Johnny, little Susie. And then when they get to be big Johnny and big Susie, they're still coming into the doctor's office, getting those prescriptions, and they know exactly what they are. I've often said, by the way, that they put something in the water to cause men to have, or women to have leaky valves. Let's just put it that way. That's just an example. And then, of course, the people go, well, gee, I'm kind of peeing in my pants. I got to go to the doctor. So they go to the doctor. The doctor gives them a pill. Here, take this prescription. You got to take this for the rest of your life. Not to mention that it has drastic side effects, a whole laundry list of drastic side effects, but it cures your leaky valve problem. I mean, come on, boys and girls. The reason most people probably have leaky valves is because they sit around all winter, they haven't been exercising, their muscles are like lax and not strong, and that's what's going on. But the doctor's going to give them a pill. He's not going to tell them, go to the gymnasium, work out, and your muscles will come back, and then you'll be able to control your bladder. That's not the doctor's solution. It's the same thing with AI. The same thing with AI, because What AI is going to do is it's going to find a solution in the AI system, making AI the controller, not you. You're not in control of your life. So anyway, okay, well, I've beaten that pretty much to death. But should AI systems even exist? And the answer is no. I don't know what, now, when it comes to developments like this, it's not like inventing a better mousetrap. Everybody wants a better mousetrap, a better light, LED lighting, or things like that. Make a major improvement, and it has no really downside to it. It's just a better, it costs a lot less in energy. Once you put them in, they last a lot longer. So an LED light bulb is a perfect example of a technology that's really beneficial and really doesn't have major side effects that are going to be problematic for people. AI systems are not like that. AI systems are going to continue to be problematic, and the more they become involved in your life, the more tangled up your life is going to be and the worse it is going to be. It does not give you quality of life. And it, you know, it puts somebody else in control of your life. The idea being that, you know, I always love these concepts where they have the planned city, and there won't be any crime. You can leave your car unlocked. There won't be any crime. Everybody will be rich. Everybody will have a lot of money. Well, gee, don't you think that all the criminals from the cities where there is high crime rate, and there it's difficult because they've already robbed everybody blind, wouldn't that be the perfect place for all the criminals to go? Well, of course. You know, the people live in this rosy-colored glasses, idyllic world, and they, you know, they imagine these things. And, you know, lollipops and roses, everything is coming up roses. Everything is just wonderful in their little make-believe world. And that's what it is. It's a make-believe world. And it's AI systems, by their very nature, are going to fail. Just like venture capital, and that's my next topic, in fact, major topic. I just want to mention a couple things here, related, actually, in a sense. What is the true age of a lot of things that we see around us? You know, the Great Pyramids, the Mayans of the, you know, the Mayan cultures, the Incas, the pre-Incas, you know, etc. And the answer is in that in the vast majority of cases, we simply don't know. We simply don't know. We don't have ages for the age of the Earth, the age of the universe, even if it has a beginning. And here's the issue. Number one, scholars, authorities, have to put a designation on something, because if they don't, then they won't be viewed as scholarly and intelligent. If they put a date on, oh, that guy put a date on such a thing, on an archaeological discovery, he must know something. Well, and in reality, they don't know anything. They're just blowing hot air. So at any rate, the age of things, and I've talked about this before, because there's this group running around saying that everything happened at the edge of the Younger Dryas period like 12,000 years ago, and that simply could not possibly be correct. And once again, you have people coming in, replacing dates that are wrong with other dates that are wrong. People who really don't have enough experience to understand this, and luckily, more and more people are starting to call them out on the carpet. People that really don't have an ego to stroke, let's put it that way. Just want to mention on the arrest ex-president, you know, the whole political world in the United States is just becoming a three-ring circus. And that's about the best thing you could say about it. And anyway, I'm not going to say any more than that. I just stay away from political issues in this show. But I want to talk about Richard Branson, Virgin Orbit Company. Just went, they just closed their doors. I just saw yesterday that they filed for bankruptcy, and they're having a layoff of 675 employees, allegedly 85% of the working staff. Now, that's a lot of people. I've worked in some fairly big companies with literally tens of thousands of employees. But for a private company doing what they're doing, 675 employees, it's a lot of people. And so you have to sell a lot of product to support the salaries and all the overhead related to that number of people. And so basically they were doing stock options. And what happened is their first attempt to send a package into orbit, and they're dealing with small payloads, 300 to 500 kilograms. They have a modified 747 airliner, jetliner, that goes up to like 50,000 feet, and then this rocket takes off from under the wing and goes allegedly up into orbit. That was the plan. So runway to orbit is, in my way of thinking, is the best way to go. It's inexpensive. You don't rockets are very expensive relative to runway to orbit. And when you look at the whole process, in fact, I have a runway to orbit launch system on my webpage, talking about a hotel launch system. But anyway, the model for what Branson was doing is the typical venture capital model, where you have a corporation, you have CEOs, you have controllers, you have all this stuff, and what you're really doing, the bottom line, is you really have an engineering staff that's about maybe a fifth to a third of the payroll, and all of the rest of this is overhead. It's really not necessary. And so if they would have been successful, they would have been able to score more money with stock offerings. But, you know, now that they failed, they have an issue with raising more money. They lost 89% of their value in one day, basically after the failure. Now, just a little bit about the failure itself. They really don't know. Let's just put it that way to begin with. And I personally, just to begin with, suspect sabotage. And Richard Branson has had in his other company dealing with outer space, which is Virgin Galactic, which was to put people into outer space in suborbital flights and bring them back down, and people pay a lot of money to do that, had a major setback recently. But I think Branson is funding that one a lot on his own, of his own money. But the Virgin Orbit Company, it listed as VORB on the NASDAQ stock exchange, was a classic venture capital model where you get a company, you staff it out, you have a product that's really not selling yet. Your investors are hoping to make money in the future. And then when it goes bankrupt like it is now, all of those people then have to take it on the chin, and they might bicker or they might be mad, but that's the way these type of investments go. Not all of them work. But imagine, I'll just imagine this, in the United States, if it were not for Elon Musk and SpaceX, which is succeeding very well, have a very successful launch rate, they had a couple failures, but relative to the number of successes, they're doing well. But they had a couple of failures early, and Musk put his own money on the line and went for a third launch. They had two initial failures, and from then on, it was like uphill. Or I'm sorry, it was uphill up to that point, and then he started getting the funding, etc., necessary. But you got to remember that SpaceX with Musk went when he won a lawsuit a number of years ago. It was, he was not getting the military launches. And so it was the good old boys working against him. And they thought they'd just squeeze him out of the picture and he'd go away. Well, he didn't go away. He took him to court and said, I have the capability, as much capability as these other aerospace companies, to put payloads, military payloads, into outer space. And the day he won that lawsuit, I think it was settled out of court. It didn't really win it. I believe he settled out of court. He got $1 billion from Fidelity and Google, and both CIA-owned operations. And so then he was able to move forward, and he's been doing very good. I mean, it's actually quite amazing. But imagine this. Imagine if SpaceX failed as Richard Branson failed. So in England, British were counting on Richard Branson to do the same thing that Elon Musk is doing in the United States. In other words, this private company would come along and supplement the national space program, the British atmospheric, or the British, the equivalent of NASA in England. But Branson failed. So that now leaves the British with really no space program. And that's where the United States was prior to Elon Musk picking up the ball and running to the goal line. And so what if Elon Musk all of a sudden started to have major failures? It's probably not expected given the class of engineers that Musk has, etc. But once again, I return to my personal belief is that Branson has been sabotaged all the way along, both in the Virgin Galactic and Virgin Orbit. They believe it was a fuel filter on one of the engines, which either was clogged up or was out of place, and it was starving the engine of fuel, one of the engines, and it didn't cool properly, so the payload never made it into orbit, was the issue. And so the orbit failed. It failed to deliver the first payload. And really, something that simple could be fixed. But I think he probably saw the writing on the wall and that somebody was just not going to let him do this. Now, I'm putting words in people's mouths here, which I really should not be doing, but somebody has to say this. And I think Branson is too nice a guy to understand that he's walked into a hornet's nest. It's really not a very level playing field. They just don't want somebody else coming in there. Okay, so now let's talk about what's going to happen to the company. Here is what happens in a layoff, in a shutting down of a company. They have a certain amount of money, but they have certain obligations. And the employees may come first in this situation, but it's very expensive to lay people off. And so what they typically do is they do it in stages. And then the money that is saved by not paying the first group of layoffs, they continue, and that generates the money. It doesn't really generate the money. It relieves the money that they would pay those employees to lay off the next group. So this process is going to take a while. And once a company gets to this choke point, it'd be almost impossible to bring them back. I don't know what they're going to do with the 15% of employees there. That would amount to, 100, at least 100 people. What are those 100 people going to do while this company is being shut down? The money then in the bankruptcy, the other people who are owed money because this company is purchasing goods and services. And by the way, I don't operate my business that way, and that's why I'm in business after 22 years, through the hard times, through the good times, and everything else, is because I simply work on my ability to pay for products that I'm getting. I don't owe anybody. I don't, other than a couple, my monthly electric bills and things like that, and other things that are monthly. I don't have a lot of debt, and that's the thing, is these companies that have a lot of debt, they create a lot of debt, and then they are operating and they're basing this on some future profit. In a case like this, launching payloads would be at least another 5 years until they even broke even. So if they started having failures any place along the line, this company was not going to make it anyway. Like so many companies, and that's what I'm saying about, which I talked about last week on my show, was the venture capital model. And that's why the venture capital model is a model for failure, because they base their investment on all of these employees, and they think, they're investing in something, when the product, the sale of the product, is in no way, shape, or form can pay back all of this investment all of the employees being employed for 5 years. I mean, you've got 1,000 people being employed for a period of 5 years before this company is going to start to even look at the end of a tunnel of having profit. So how is this company going to succeed? It's working at a loss. And how many of these 1,000 people were really necessary to accomplish the final goal of putting a rocket into orbit? And my guess is that they probably only needed maybe 100 people. This is the problem with NASA, or like the British Space Agency in general, is they build up this massive staff. And it was rather comical because when Trump was president, remember that they had the fiscal shutdown. Congress couldn't agree on a budget. And so it went into the a period of time where the government literally shut down. And they set off without pay the people who were called non-essential. NASA had the highest number of non-essential people at 95%. If you can even imagine that. And so they, but what was weird was that they actually funded NASA at 100%. The EPA, I believe, was second in line, and they were at only like maybe 50% non-essential. But NASA was just by far the horse way out in front of the race of non-essential workers. 95% of the workers at NASA are non-essential, which tells you they are spending a boatload of money for nothing. Okay, so anyway, the situation then in England is that the British Space Agency has nothing. They were depending on Branson. And in the United States, the only reason we have a space program is because of what Elon Musk is doing. And that probably is fairly stable given the fact that their mean time between failure is very low compared to the number of successes. Okay, switching gears just a little bit here. This is kind of funny. It's pathetic, pathetically funny. But if you look at space.com the last few days, here's the lead story. This is from our top NASA mouthpiece space news reporting agency online called space.com. Here's the top story. Aliens could be hiding in Terminator zones on planets with eternal night. What? You can't be serious. That's your top latest news story. I'll read it again just because it's so absurd. Aliens could be hiding in Terminator zones on planets with eternal night. Well, first of all, that wouldn't be in our solar system, because there are no zones, Terminator zones, where where you would have eternal night. And so that aliens could be hiding there. Like, what on earth? I mean, this is something out of a really Class C sci-fi novel, you know, like a dime store novel. The second top story is The Mandalorian Season 3, Episode 6, an ill-timed side guest that goes nowhere. They're giving a review of a cable sci-fi program called Mandalorian, which is about, you know, weird space stuff, in Episode 3. I mean, this is, they're catering to the geek society, you know, the Trekkie society. And, you know, then the third story is the best lenses for astrophotography in 2023. I mean, there's nothing going on. And down the line is a NASA failure, where the next mission to Venus is failing because of internal NASA boondoggles. I mean, this is what's going on with the $20 billion a year space program. I mean, this is beyond absurd. I don't want to waste any more time on this show discussing this, but I mean, can it get any more bizarre and weird and stupid than that? Okay, last couple minutes, I want to talk about the water filters, JMCC water filters, my 22-year-old company, and continuing. Best water filters on the planet, We're selling, of course, the 7-inch HI filters, the newest, most modern, the best technology on the market for water filtration. And these are replacement filter elements for any of the gravity water filters that have been built in the last, 25, 30 years. They all have the same hole size. They all, as long as you have a 7-inch clearance in the container. And these hang down. Why do they hang down? Because instead of sticking up into the top container, because when the water level starts to drop, if your filter element sticks up in the upper container, guess what? As the water level drops down, the top of that filter is not doing anything anymore. And as the water drops down more and more, guess what? 80% of your water is being filtered through the top two, through the bottom 2 inches of your water filter. That's just goofy. So that's not the way you should design a water filter. So my water filters hang down so that it's a two-stage filter, a physical filter followed by a medium filter, which removes all the chemicals. And they're the very best price, all in one. Remove everything, all in one filter, and the very lowest price. And we, of course, have free shipping to the 50 states for those. The other thing is the MR5 water filter. The whole house water filtration system is now has a great price on it. Go to the webpage jmccwaterfilters.com, and also my new book, The Real History of Man and Earth, Myth, Magic, and Mayhem, is available on Amazon, and you can buy it there as a perfect bound, it's called. It's a paper, heavy paper cover. A beautiful book. I mean, I'm very proud of this, the artwork, etc., on the cover. And also available in an ebook format on my very own webpage, jmccsci.com. So a lot of things going on, and I'll be back at trying to get all of my other books there in print form. That should happen in the next number of months. But anyway, those things help support what I do. I don't have government grants. I don't have sponsors. All of the things that I do come from what you purchase in terms of support. And like I say, my water filters are the best on the planet. Nobody has ever designed or marketed a water filter system like mine. And of course, the water filters also, I have this wonderful stainless steel sink filter. Excellent, excellent quality. And a high flow rate with a swivel spigot that swivels in 360 degrees. Very nice product. Once again, the webpage, jmccsci.com and jmccwaterfilters.com. This is James McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.